now alert to the actual situation, Lord Achyuta saw before him on the battlefield neither the messenger nor his father's body. It was as if he had awakened from a dream. Seeing his enemy flying above him in his salva plane, the Lord then prepared to kill him. Such is the account given by some sages, O wise king. But those who speak in this illogical way are contradicting themselves, having forgotten their own previous statements. How can lamentation, bewilderment, material affection, or fear, all born out of ignorance, be ascribed to the infinite Supreme Lord, whose perception, knowledge, and power are all similarly infinite? By virtue of self-realization fortified by service rendered to his feet, devotees of the Lord dispel the bodily concept of life, which has bewildered the soul since time immemorial. Thus they attain eternal glory in his personal association. How then can that supreme truth, the destination of all genuine saints, be subject to illusion? While Shalva continued to hurl torrents of weapons at him with great force, Lord Krishna, whose prowess never fails, shot his arrows at Shalva, wounding him and shattering his armor, bow, and crest jewel. Then, with his club, the Lord smashed his enemy's salva airship. Shattered into thousands of pieces by Lord Krishna's club, the salva airship plummeted into the water. Shalva abandoned it, stationed himself on the ground, took up his club, and rushed toward Lord Krishna. As Shalva rushed at him, the Lord shot a bullet dart and cut off his arm that held the club. Having finally decided to kill Shalva, Krishna then raised his Sudarshan disc weapon, which resembled the sun at the time of universal annihilation. The brilliantly shining Lord appeared like the easternmost mountain bearing the rising sun. Employing his disc, Lord Hari removed that great magician's head with its earrings and crown, just as Purandara had used his thunderbolt to cut off Vritra's head. Seeing this, all of Shalva's followers cried out, "Alas! Alas!" With the sinful Shalva now dead and his salva airship destroyed, the heavens resounded with kettle drums played by groups of demigods. Then Dantavakra, wanting to avenge the death of his friends, furiously attacked the Lord. Chapter 78. The Killing of Dantavakra, Vidurata, and Romaharshan. Shukadeva Goswami said, acting out of friendship for Shishupal, Shalva, and Pandraka, who had passed on to the next world, the wicked Dantavakra appeared on the battlefield in a great rage, O king. All alone, on foot, and wielding a club in his hand, the mighty warrior shook the earth with his footsteps. Seeing Dantavakra approach, Lord Krishna quickly picked up his club, jumped down from his chariot, and stopped his advancing opponent just as the shore holds back the ocean. Raising his club, the reckless king of Karusha said to Lord Mukunda, "What luck! What luck to have you come before me today! You are our maternal cousin, Krishna, but you committed violence against my friends, and now you want to kill me also. Therefore, fool, I will kill you with my thunderbolt club. Then, O unintelligent one, I who am obliged to my friends will have repaid my debt to them by killing you, my enemy disguised as a relative, who are like a disease within my body." Thus trying to harass Lord Krishna with harsh words, as one might trick an elephant with sharp goads, Dantavakra struck the Lord on the head with his club and roared like a lion. Although hit by Dantavakra's club, Lord Krishna, the deliverer of the others, did not budge from his place on the battlefield. Rather, with his massive Komadiki club, the Lord struck Dantavakra in the middle of his chest. His heart shattered by the club's blow, Dantavakra vomited blood and fell lifeless to the ground, his hair disheveled and his arms and legs sprawling. A most subtle and wondrous spark of light then rose from the demon's body and entered Lord Krishna while everyone looked on, just as when Shishupal was killed. But then Dantavakra's brother Vidurata, immersed in sorrow over his brother's death, came forward breathing heavily, sword and shield in hand. He wanted to kill the Lord. As Vidurata fell upon him, Lord Krishna used his razor-edged Sudarshan disc to remove his head, complete with its helmet and earrings. Having thus destroyed Shalva and his salva airship, along with Dantavakra and his younger brother, all of whom were invincible before any other opponent, The Lord was praised by demigods, human beings, and great sages, by Siddhas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, and Mahoravas, and also by Apsaras, Pitas, Yakshas, Kinnaras, and Charanas. As they sang his glories and showered him with flowers, the Supreme Lord entered his festively decorated capital city in the company of the most eminent Rishnis. Thus Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of all mystic power and Lord of the universe, is ever victorious. Only those of beastly vision think he sometimes suffers defeat. Lord Balaram then heard that the Kurus were preparing for war with the Pandavas. Being neutral, he departed on the pretext of going to bathe in holy places. After bathing at Prabhas and honoring the demigods, sages, forefathers, and prominent human beings, he went in the company of Brahmins to the portion of the Saraswati that flows inland. Lord Balaram visited the broad Bindusaras lake, Chitakupa, Sudarshan, Vishal, Dhammatirtha, Chakratirtha, and the eastward flowing Saraswati. He also went to all the holy places along the Yamuna and the Ganges, and then he came to the Naimisha forest, where great sages were performing an elaborate sacrifice. Recognizing the Lord upon his arrival, the sages, who had been engaged in their sacrificial rituals for a long time, greeted him properly by standing up, bowing down, and worshipping him. After being thus worshipped along with his entourage, the Lord accepted a seat of honor. Then he noticed that Romaharsham, Vyasadeva's disciple, had remained seated. Lord Balaram became extremely angry upon seeing how this member of the Suta caste had failed to stand up, bow down, or join his palms, and also how he was sitting above all the learned Brahmins. Lord Balaram said, "Because this fool born from an improperly mixed marriage sits above all these Brahmins, and even above me, the protector of religion, he deserves to die. Although he is a disciple of the divine sage Vyas and has thoroughly learned many scriptures from him, including the law books of religious duties and the epic histories and Puranas, all this study has not produced good qualities in him. Rather, his study of the scriptures is like an actor studying his part, for he is not self-controlled or humble and vainly presumes himself a scholarly authority, though he has failed to conquer his own mind. The very purpose of my descent into this world is to kill such hypocrites who pretend to be religious. Indeed, they are the most sinful rascals." Although Lord Balaram had stopped killing the impious, Romaharsham's death was inevitable. Thus, having spoken, the Lord killed him by picking up a blade of kusha grass and touching him with its tip. All the sages cried out, "Alas, alas!" in great distress. They told Lord Sankarshan, "O Master, you have committed an irreligious act. O favorite of the Yadus, we gave him the seat of the spiritual master and promised him long life and freedom from physical pain for as long as this sacrifice continues. You have unknowingly killed a Brahmin. Of course, even the injunctions of revealed scripture cannot dictate to you, the Lord of all mystic power. But if by your own free will you nonetheless carry out the prescribed purification for this slaying of a Brahmin, O purifier of the whole world, people in general will greatly benefit by your example." The Personality of Godhead said, "I will certainly perform the atonement for this killing, since I wish to show compassion to the people in general. Please, therefore, prescribe for me whatever ritual is to be done first. O sages, just say the word, and by my mystic power I shall restore everything you promised him, long life, strength, and sensory power." The sages said, "Please see to it, O Rama, that your power and that of the Kusha weapon, as well as our promise and Romaharsham's death, all remain intact." The Supreme Lord said, "The Vedas instruct us that one's own self takes birth again as one's son. Thus let Romaharsham's son become the speaker of the Puranas, and let him be endowed with long life, strong senses, and stamina. Please tell me your desire, O best of sages, and I shall certainly fulfill it. And, O wise souls, please carefully determine my proper atonement, since I do not know what it might be." The sages said, "A fearsome demon named Balvala, the son of Ilvala, comes here every new moon day and contaminates our sacrifice. O descendant of the Shaha, please kill that sinful demon who pours down pus, blood, feces, urine, wine, and meat upon us. This is the best service you can do for us." Thereafter, for 12 months, you should circumambulate the land of Bharata in a mood of serious meditation, executing austerities and bathing at various holy pilgrimage sites. In this way, you will become purified. Chapter 79, Lord Balaram Goes on Pilgrimage. Shukadev Goswami said, "Then, on the new moon day, a fierce and frightening wind arose, scattering dust all about and spreading the smell of pus everywhere. Next, onto the sacrificial arena came a downpour of abominable things sent by Balvala, after which the demon himself appeared, trident in hand. The immense demon resembled a mass of black carbon. His topknot and beard were like molten copper, and his face had horrible fangs and furrowed eyebrows. Upon seeing him, Lord Balaram thought of his club, which tears to pieces his enemy's armies, and his plow weapon, which punishes the demons. Thus summoned, his two weapons appeared before him at once. With the tip of his plow, Lord Balaram caught hold of the demon Balvala as he flew through the sky, and with his club, the Lord angrily struck that harasser of Brahmins on the head. Balvala cried out in agony and fell to the ground, his forehead cracked open and gushing blood. He resembled a red mountain struck by a lightning bolt. The exalted sages honored Lord Rama with sincere prayers and awarded him infallible blessings. Then they performed his ritual bath, just as the demigods had formerly bathed Indra when he killed Vritra. They gave Lord Balaram a Vaijayanti garland of unfading lotuses in which resided the goddess of fortune, and they also gave him a set of divine garments and jewelry. Then, given leave by the sages, the Lord went with a contingent of Brahmins to the Kaushiki River, where he bathed. From there he went to the lake from which flows the river Sarayu. The Lord followed the course of the Sarayu until he came to Prayag, where he bathed and then performed rituals to propitiate the demigods and other living beings. Next he went to the ashram of Pulaha Rishi. Lord Balaram bathed in the Gomati, Gandaki, and Vipasha rivers, and also immersed himself in the Shona. He went to Gaya, where he worshipped his forefathers, and to the mouth of the Ganges, where he performed purifying ablutions. At Mount Mahindra, he saw Lord Parashuram and offered him prayers, and then he bathed in the seven branches of the Godavari River, and also in the rivers Vena, Pampa, and Bhimarati. Then Lord Balaram met Lord Skanda and visited Sri Shaila, the abode of Lord Girisha. In the southern provinces known as Dravidadesh, the Supreme Lord saw the sacred Venkata Hill, as well as the cities of Kamakoshni and Kanchi, the exalted Kaveri River, and the most holy Sri Ranga, where Lord Krishna has manifested himself. From there he went to Rishabha Mountain, where Lord Krishna also lives, and to the southern Mathura. Then he came to Setubandha, where the most grievous sins are destroyed. There at Setubandha, Lord Balaram gave Brahmins 10,000 cows in charity. He then visited the Kritamala and Tamraparni rivers and the great Malaya mountains. In the Malaya range, Lord Balaram found Agastya Rishi sitting in meditation. After bowing down to the sage, the Lord offered him prayers and then received blessings from him. Taking leave from Agastya, he proceeded to the shore of the southern ocean, where he saw Goddess Durga in her form of Kanyakumari. Next he went to Palgun Tirtha and bathed in the sacred Panchapsara lake, where Lord Vishnu had directly manifested himself. At this place he gave away another 10,000 cows. The Supreme Lord then traveled through the kingdoms of Kerala and Trigarta, visiting Lord Shiva's sacred city of Gokarna, where Lord Shiva directly manifests himself. After also visiting Goddess Parvati, who dwells on an island, Lord Balaram went to the holy district of Shurparaka and bathed in the Tapi, Payoshini, and Nirvindya rivers. He next entered the Dandaka forest and went to the river Reva, along which the city of Mahishmati is found. Then he bathed at Manutirtha and finally returned to Prabhas. The Lord heard from Brahmins how all the kings involved in the battle taking place between the Kurus and Pandavas had been killed. From this, he concluded that the earth was now relieved of her burden. Wanting to stop the club fight then raging between Bhima and Duryodhana on the battlefield, Lord Balaram went to Kurukshetra. When Yudhishthir, Lord Krishna, Arjuna, and the twin brothers Nakula and Sahadev saw Lord Balaram, they offered him respectful obeisances but said nothing, thinking, "What has he come here to tell us?" Lord Balaram found Duryodhana and Bhima with clubs in their hands, each furiously striving for victory over the other as they circled about skillfully. The Lord addressed them as follows, "King Duryodhana and Bhima, listen! You two warriors are equal in fighting prowess. I know that one of you has greater physical power, while the other is better trained in technique. Since you are so evenly matched in fighting prowess, I do not see how either of you can win or lose this duel. Therefore, please stop this useless battle." They did not accept Lord Balaram's request, O King, although it was logical, for their mutual enmity was irrevocable. Each of them constantly remembered the insults and injuries he had suffered from the other. Concluding that the battle was the arrangement of fate, Lord Balaram went back to Dwaraka. There he was greeted by Ugrasen and his other relatives, who were all delighted to see him. Later, Lord Balaram returned to Naimasharanya, where the sages joyfully engaged him, the embodiment of all sacrifice, in performing various kinds of Vedic sacrifice. Lord Balaram was now retired from warfare. The all-powerful Lord Balaram bestowed upon the sages pure spiritual knowledge by which they could see the whole universe within him and also see him pervading everything. After executing with his wife the Avabhrikya ablutions, the beautifully dressed and ornamented Lord Balaram, encircled by his immediate family and other relatives and friends, looked as splendid as the moon surrounded by its effulgent rays. Countless other such pastimes were performed by mighty Balaram, the unlimited and immeasurable Supreme Lord, whose mystic Yogamaya power makes him appear to be a human being. All the activities of the unlimited Lord Balaram are amazing. Anyone who regularly remembers them at dawn and dusk will become very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Vishnu. Chapter 80, The Brahman Sudama Visits Lord Krishna in Dwaraka. King Parikshit said, "My Lord, O Master, I wish to hear about other valorous deeds performed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, whose valor is unlimited. O Brahman, how could anyone who knows the essence of life and is disgusted with endeavoring for sense gratification give up the transcendental topics of Lord Krishna after hearing them repeatedly? Actual speech is that which describes the qualities of the Lord. Real hands are those that work for Him. A true mind is that which always remembers Him dwelling within everything moving and non-moving. And actual ears are those that listen to sanctifying topics about Him. An actual head is one that bows down to the Lord in His manifestations among the moving and non-moving creatures. Real eyes are those that see only the Lord. And actual limbs are those which regularly honor the water that has bathed the Lord's feet or those of His devotees." Suta Goswami said, "Thus questioned by King Vishnurata, the powerful sage Bhadarayani replied, his heart fully absorbed in meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev." Sukadev Goswami said, "Lord Krishna had a certain Brahmin friend named Sudama, who was most learned in Vedic knowledge and detached from all sense enjoyment. Furthermore, his mind was peaceful and his senses subdued. Living as a householder, he maintained himself with whatever came of its own accord. The wife of that poorly dressed Brahmin suffered along with him and was emaciated from hunger. The chaste wife of the poverty-stricken Brahmin once approached him, her face dried up because of her distress. Trembling with fear, she spoke as follows, 'O Brahman, isn't it true that the husband of the goddess of fortune is the personal friend of your exalted self? That greatest of Yadavas, the Supreme Lord Krishna, is compassionate to Brahmins and very willing to grant them his shelter. O fortunate one, please approach him, the real shelter of all saints. He will certainly give abundant wealth to such a suffering householder as you. Lord Krishna is now the ruler of the Bhojas, Vrishnis and Unlikas, and is staying at Dwaraka. Since he gives even his own self to anyone who simply remembers his lotus feet, what doubt is there that he, the spiritual master of the universe, will bestow upon his sincere worshipper prosperity and material enjoyment, which are not even very desirable?'
When his wife thus repeatedly implored him in various ways, the Brahmin thought to himself, "To see Lord Krishna is indeed the greatest achievement in life." Thus he decided to go, but first he told her, "My good wife, if there is anything in the house I can bring as a gift, please give it to me." Sudama's wife begged 4 handfuls of flat rice from neighboring Brahmins, tied up the rice in a torn piece of cloth, and gave it to her husband as a present for Lord Krishna. Taking the flat rice, the saintly Brahmin set off for Dwarka, all the while wondering, "How will I be able to have Krishna's audience?" The learned Brahmin, joined by some local Brahmins, passed 3 guard stations and went through 3 gateways, and then he walked by the homes of Lord Krishna's faithful devotees, the Yundakas and Vrishnis, which ordinarily no one could do. He then entered one of the opulent palaces belonging to Lord Hari's 16,000 queens, and when he did so, he felt as if he were attaining the bliss of liberation. At that time, Lord Achyuta was seated on his consort's bed. Spotting the Brahmin at some distance, the Lord immediately stood up, went forward to meet him, and with great pleasure embraced him. The lotus-eyed Supreme Lord felt intense ecstasy upon touching the body of his dear friend, the wise Brahmin, and thus he shed tears of love. Lord Krishna seated his friend Sudama upon the bed. Then the Lord, who purifies the whole world, personally offered him various tokens of respect and washed his feet, after which he sprinkled the water on his own head. Krishna anointed him with divinely fragrant sandalwood, aguru, and kumkum pastes, and happily worshipped him with aromatic incense and arrays of lamps. After finally offering him betel nut and the gift of a cow, he welcomed him with pleasing words. By fanning him with her chamara, the divine goddess of fortune personally served that poor Brahmin, whose clothing was torn and dirty, and who was so thin that veins were visible all over his body. The people in the royal palace were astonished to see Krishna, the Lord of spotless glory, so lovingly honor this shabbily dressed Brahmin. The residents of the palace said, "What pious acts has this unkempt, impoverished Brahmin performed? People regard him as lowly and contemptible, yet the spiritual master of the 3 worlds, the abode of Goddess Sri, is serving him reverently. Leaving the goddess of fortune sitting on her bed, the Lord has embraced this Brahmin as if he were an older brother." Taking each other's hands, O King, Krishna and Sudama talked pleasantly about how they once lived together in the school of their guru. The Supreme Lord said, "My dear Brahmin, you know well the ways of Dharma. After you offered the gift of remuneration to our guru and returned home from his school, did you marry a compatible wife or not? Even though you are mostly involved in household affairs, your mind is not affected by material desires. Nor, O learned one, do you take much pleasure in the pursuit of material wealth. This I am well aware of. Having renounced all material propensities which spring from the Lord's illusory energy, some people execute worldly duties with their minds undisturbed by mundane desires. They act as I do, to instruct the general populace. My dear Brahmin, do you remember how we lived together in our spiritual master's school? When a twice-born student has learned from his guru all that is to be learned, he can enjoy spiritual life, which lies beyond all ignorance. My dear friend, he who gives a person his physical birth is his first spiritual master, and he who initiates him as a twice-born Brahmin and engages him in religious duties is indeed more directly his spiritual master. But the person who bestows transcendental knowledge upon the members of all the spiritual orders of society is one's ultimate spiritual master. Indeed, he is as good as my own self. Certainly, O Brahmin, of all the followers of the Varnashram system, those who take advantage of the words I speak in my form as the spiritual master, and thus easily cross over the ocean of material existence, best understand their own true welfare. I, the soul of all beings, am not as satisfied by ritual worship, brahminical initiation, penances, or self-discipline, as I am by faithful service rendered to one's spiritual master. O Brahmin, do you remember what happened to us while we were living with our spiritual master? Once, our guru's wife sent us to fetch firewood, and after we entered the vast forest, an unseasonal storm arose, with fierce wind and rain and harsh thunder. Then, as the sun set, the forest was covered by darkness in every direction, and with all the flooding we could not distinguish high land from low. Constantly besieged by the powerful wind and rain, we lost our way amidst the flooding waters. We simply held each other's hands, and in great distress wandered aimlessly about the forest. Our guru, Sandipani, understood our predicament, set out after sunrise to search for us, his disciples, and found us in distress. Sandipani said, "O my children, you have suffered so much for my sake. The body is most dear to every living creature, but you are so dedicated to me that you completely disregarded your own comfort. This indeed is the duty of all true disciples, to repay the debt to their spiritual master by offering him, with pure hearts, their wealth and even their very lives. You boys are first-class Brahmins, and I am satisfied with you. May all your desires be fulfilled, and may the Vedic mantras you have learned never lose their meaning for you, in this world or the next." Lord Krishna continued, "We had many similar experiences while living in our spiritual master's home. Simply by the grace of the spiritual master, a person can fulfill life's purpose and attain eternal peace." Sudama said, "What could I possibly have failed to achieve, O Lord of Lords, O Universal Teacher, since I was able to personally live with you, whose every desire is fulfilled, at the home of our spiritual master? O Almighty Lord, your body comprises the absolute truth in the form of the Vedas, and is thus the source of all auspicious goals of life. That you took up residence at the school of a spiritual master is simply one of your pastimes in which you play the role of a human being." Chapter 81. The Lord Blesses Sudama Brahman. Shukadeva Goswami said, "Lord Krishna perfectly knows the hearts of all living beings, and he is especially devoted to the Brahmins. While the Lord conversed in this way with the best of the twice-born, he laughed and spoke the following words to that dear friend of his, the Brahmin Sudama, all the while smiling and looking upon him with affection." The Supreme Lord said, "O Brahmin, what gift have you brought me from home? I regard as great even the smallest gift offered by my devotees in pure love, but even great offerings presented by non-devotees do not please me. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I will accept it." Even after being addressed in this way, O King, the Brahmin felt too embarrassed to offer his palmfuls of flat rice to the husband of the goddess of fortune. He simply kept his head bowed in shame. Being the direct witness in the hearts of all living beings, Lord Krishna fully understood why Sudama had come to see him. Thus he thought, "In the past, my friend has never worshipped me out of a desire for material opulence, but now he comes to me to satisfy his chaste and devoted wife. I will give him riches that even the immortal demigods cannot obtain." Thinking like this, the Lord snatched from the Brahmin's garment the grains of flat rice tied up in an old piece of cloth and exclaimed, "What is this? My friend, have you brought this for me? It gives me extreme pleasure. Indeed, these few grains of flat rice will satisfy not only me, but also the entire universe." After saying this, the Supreme Lord ate one palmful and was about to eat a second when the devoted goddess Rukmini took hold of his hand. Queen Rukmini said, "This is more than enough, O soul of the universe, to secure him an abundance of all kinds of wealth in this world and the next. After all, one's prosperity depends simply on your satisfaction." The Brahmin spent that night in Lord Achyuta's palace after eating and drinking to his full satisfaction. He felt as if he had gone to the spiritual world. The next day, Sudama set off for home while being honored by Lord Krishna, the self-satisfied maintainer of the universe. The Brahmin felt greatly delighted as he walked along the road. Although he had apparently received no wealth from Lord Krishna, Sudama was too shy to beg for it on his own. He simply returned home, feeling perfectly satisfied to have had the Supreme Lord's audience. Sudama thought, "Lord Krishna is known to be devoted to the Brahmins, and now I have personally seen this devotion. Indeed, he who carries the goddess of fortune on his chest has embraced the poorest beggar. Who am I, a sinful, poor friend of a Brahmin? And who is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full in six opulences? Nonetheless, he has embraced me with his two arms. He treated me just like one of his brothers, making me sit on the bed of his beloved consort. And because I was fatigued, his queen personally fanned me with a yak-tailed chamara. Although he is the lord of all demigods and the object of worship for all Brahmins, he worshipped me as if I were a demigod myself, massaging my feet and rendering other humble services. Devotional service to his lotus feet is the root cause of all the perfections a person can find in heaven, in liberation, in the subterranean regions, and on earth. Thinking, if this poor wretch suddenly becomes rich, he will forget me in his intoxicating happiness. The compassionate Lord did not grant me even a little wealth. Thinking thus to himself, Sudama finally came to the place where his home stood. But that place was now crowded on all sides with towering celestial palaces rivaling the combined brilliance of the sun, fire, and the moon. There were splendorous courtyards and gardens, each filled with flocks of cooing birds and beautified by ponds in which Kumuda, Ambroja, Kalara, and Utpala lotuses grew. Finely attired men and doe-eyed women stood in attendance. Sudama wondered, what is all this? Whose property is it? How has this all come about? As he continued to ponder in this way, the beautiful men and maidservants, as effulgent as demigods, came forward to greet their greatly fortunate master with loud song and instrumental music. When she heard that her husband had arrived, the Brahmin's wife quickly came out of the house in a jubilant flurry. She resembled the goddess of fortune herself emerging from her divine abode. When the chaste lady saw her husband, her eyes filled with tears of love and eagerness. As she held her eyes closed, she solemnly bowed down to him, and in her heart she embraced him. Sudama was amazed to see his wife. Shining forth in the midst of maidservants adorned with jeweled lockets, she looked as effulgent as a demigoddess in her celestial airplane. With pleasure, he took his wife with him and entered his house, where there were hundreds of gem-studded pillars, just as in the palace of Lord Mahindra. In Sudama's home were beds as soft and white as the foam of milk, with bedsteads made of ivory and ornamented with gold. There were also couches with golden legs, as well as royal chamara fans, golden thrones, soft cushions, and gleaming canopies hung with strings of pearls. Upon the walls of sparkling crystal glass, inlaid with precious emeralds, shone jeweled lamps, and the women in the palace were all adorned with precious gems. As he viewed this luxurious opulence of all varieties, the Brahmin calmly reasoned to himself about his unexpected prosperity. Sudama thought, I have always been poor. Certainly the only possible way that such an unfortunate person as myself could become suddenly rich is that Lord Krishna, the supremely opulent chief of the Yadu dynasty, has glanced upon me. After all, my friend Krishna, the most exalted of the Dasharathas and the enjoyer of unlimited wealth, noticed that I secretly intended to beg from him. Thus, even though he said nothing about it when I stood before him, he actually bestowed upon me the most abundant riches. In this way, he acted just like a merciful rain cloud. The Lord considers even his greatest benedictions to be insignificant, while he magnifies even a small service rendered to him by his well-wishing devotee. Thus, with pleasure, the Supreme Soul accepted a single palmful of the rice I brought him. The Lord is the supremely compassionate reservoir of all transcendental qualities. Life after life may I serve him with love, friendship, and sympathy, and may I cultivate such firm attachment for him by the precious association of his devotees. To a devotee who lacks spiritual insight, the Supreme Lord will not grant the wonderful opulences of this world, kingly power, and material assets. Indeed, in his infinite wisdom, the unborn Lord well knows how the intoxication of pride can cause the downfall of the wealthy. Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus firmly fixing his determination by means of his spiritual intelligence, Sudama remained absolutely devoted to Lord Krishna, the shelter of all living beings. Free from avarice, he enjoyed, together with his wife, the sense pleasures that had been bestowed upon him, always with the idea of eventually renouncing all sense gratification. Lord Hari is the god of all gods, the master of all sacrifices, and the supreme ruler. But he accepts the saintly Brahmins as his masters, and so there exists no deity higher than them. Thus seeing how the unconquerable Supreme Lord is nonetheless conquered by his own servants, the Lord's dear Brahman friend felt the remaining knots of material attachment within his heart being cut by the force of his constant meditation on the Lord. In a short time, he attained Lord Krishna's supreme abode, the destination of great saints. The Lord always shows Brahmins special favor. Anyone who hears this account of the Supreme Lord's kindness to Brahmins will come to develop love for the Lord and thus become freed from the bondage of material work. Chapter 82. Krishna and Balaram meet the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Shukadeva Goswami said, "Once, while Balaram and Krishna were living in Dwaraka, there occurred a great eclipse of the sun, just as if the end of Lord Brahma's day had come. Knowing of this eclipse in advance, many people went to the holy place known as Samanta Panchaka in order to earn pious credit. After ridding the earth of kings, Lord Parashuram, the foremost of warriors, created huge lakes from the king's blood at Samanta Panchaka. Although he is never tainted by karmic reactions, Lord Parashuram performed sacrifices there to instruct people in general. Thus he acted like an ordinary person trying to free himself of sins. From all parts of Bharatavarsha, a great number of people now came to that Samanta Panchaka on pilgrimage. Among those arriving at the holy place were many Vrishnis, such as Gada, Prajumna, and Samba, hoping to be relieved of their sins. Akrura, Vasudev, Ahuka, and other kings also went there. Aniruddha remained in Dwaraka with Suchandra, Shuka, and Sarana to guard the city, together with Kritavarma, the commander of their armed forces. The mighty Yadavas passed with great majesty along the road. They were attended by their soldiers, who rode on chariots rivaling the airplanes of heaven, on horses moving with a rhythmic gait, and on bellowing elephants as huge as clouds. Also with them were many infantrymen as effulgent as celestial Vidyadharas. The Yadavas were so divinely dressed, being adorned with gold necklaces and flower garlands and wearing fine armor, that as they proceeded along the road with their wives, they seemed to be demigods flying through the sky. At Samanta Panchaka, the saintly Yadavas bathed and then observed a fast with careful attention. Afterward, they presented Brahmins with cows bedecked with garments, flower garlands, and gold necklaces. In accordance with scriptural injunctions, the descendants of Vishnu then bathed once more in Lord Parashuram's lakes and fed first-class Brahmins with sumptuous food. All the while they prayed, "May we be granted devotion to Lord Krishna." Then, with the permission of Lord Krishna, their sole object of worship, the Vrishnis ate breakfast and sat down at their leisure beneath trees that gave cooling shade. The Yadavas saw that many of the kings who had arrived were old friends and relatives. The Matsyas, Ushinaras, Kaushalyas, Vidarbhas, Kurus, Srinjayas, Kambojas, Kaikeyas, Madras, Kuntis, and the kings of Anarta and Kerala. They also saw many hundreds of other kings, both allies and adversaries. In addition, my dear King Parikshit, they saw their dear friends Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men and women who had been suffering in anxiety for so long. As the great joy of seeing one another made the lotuses of their hearts and faces bloom with fresh beauty, the men embraced one another enthusiastically. With tears pouring from their eyes, the hair on their bodies standing on end, and their voices choked up, they all felt intense bliss. The women glanced at one another with pure smiles of loving friendship, and when they embraced, their breasts, smeared with saffron paste, pressed against one another as their eyes filled with tears of affection. They all then offered obeisances to their elders and received respect in turn from their younger relatives. After inquiring from one another about the comfort of their trip and their well-being, they proceeded to talk about Krishna. Queen Kunti met with her brothers and sisters and their children, and also with her parents, her brothers' wives, and Lord Mukunda. While talking with them, she forgot her sorrow. Queen Kunti said, "My dear respectable brother Vasudev, I feel that my desires have been frustrated because although all of you are most saintly, you forgot me during my calamities. Friends and family members, even children, brothers, and parents, forget a dear one whom Providence no longer favors." Sri Vasudev said, "Dear sister, please do not be angry with us. We are only ordinary men, playthings of fate. Indeed, whether a person acts on his own or is forced by others, he is always under the Supreme Lord's control. harassed by Kamsa, we all fled in various directions, but by the grace of Providence, we have now finally been able to return to our homes, my dear sister. Shukadev Goswami said, Vasudev, Ugrasen, and the other Yadus honored the various kings, who became supremely blissful and content upon seeing Lord Achyuta. All the royalty present, including Bhishma, Drona, Dhritarashtra, Gandhari and her sons, the Pandavas and their wives, Kunti, Sanjaya, Vidura, Kripacharya, Kunti Doja, Virata, Bhishmaka, the great Nagnajit, Purujit, Drupada, Shalya, Drishtaketu, Kasiraj, Dhamagosh, Vishalaksha, Maitila, Madra, Kekaya, Yudhamanyu, Susharma, Balika with his associates and their sons, and the many other kings subservient to Maharaj Yudhisthira, all of them, O best of kings, were simply amazed to see the transcendental form of Lord Krishna, the abode of all opulence and beauty, standing before them with his consorts. After Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna had liberally honored them, with great joy and enthusiasm, these kings began to praise the members of the Vrishni clan, Sri Krishna's personal associates. The king said, O King of the Bhojas, you alone among men have achieved a truly exalted birth, for you continually behold Lord Krishna, who is rarely visible even to great yogis. His fame, as broadcast by the Vedas, the water that has washed his feet, and the words he speaks in the form of the revealed scriptures, these thoroughly purify this universe. Although the earth's good fortune was ravaged by time, the touch of his lotus feet has revitalized her, and thus she is raining down on us the fulfillment of all our desires. The same Lord Vishnu who makes one forget the goals of heaven and liberation has now entered into marital and blood relationships with you, who otherwise travel on the hellish path of family life. Indeed, in these relationships you see and touch him directly, walk beside him, converse with him, and together with him lie down to rest, sit at ease, and take your meals. Shukadev Goswami said, When Nanda Maharaj learned that the Yadus had arrived, led by Krishna, he immediately went to see them. The cowherds accompanied him, their various possessions loaded on their wagons. Seeing Nanda, the Vrishnis were delighted and stood up like dead bodies coming back to life. Having felt much distress at not seeing him for so long, they held them in a tight embrace. Vasudev embraced Nanda Maharaj with great joy. Beside himself with ecstatic love, Vasudev remembered the troubles Kamsa had caused him, forcing him to leave his sons in Gokula for their safety. Krishna and Balaram embraced their foster parents and bowed down to them, but their throats were so choked up with tears of love that the two lords could say nothing. Raising their two sons onto their laps and holding them in their arms, Nanda and saintly Mother Yashoda forgot their sorrow. Then Rohini and Devaki both embraced the Queen of Braja, remembering the faithful friendship she had shown them. Their throats choking with tears, they addressed her as follows. What woman could forget the unceasing friendship you and Nanda have shown us, dear Queen of Braja? There is no way to repay you in this world, even with the wealth of Indra. Before these two boys had ever seen their real parents, you acted as their parents and gave them all affectionate care, training, nourishment, and protection. They were never afraid, good lady, because you protected them just as eyelids protect the eyes. Indeed, saintly persons like you never discriminate between outsiders and their own kin. Shukadev Goswami said, While gazing at their beloved Krishna, the young gopis used to condemn the creator of their eyelids, which would momentarily block their vision of him. Now, seeing Krishna again after such a long separation, with their eyes they took him into their hearts, and there they embraced him to their full satisfaction. In this way they became totally absorbed in ecstatic meditation upon him, although those who constantly practice mystic yoga find such absorption difficult to achieve. The Supreme Lord approached the gopis in a secluded place as they stood in their ecstatic trance. After embracing each of them and inquiring about their well-being, he laughed and spoke as follows. My dear girlfriends, do you still remember me? It was for my relative's sake that I stayed away so long, intent on destroying my enemies. Do you perhaps think I am ungrateful and thus hold me in contempt? After all, it is the Supreme Lord who brings living beings together and then separates them. Just as the wind brings together masses of clouds, blades of grass, wisps of cotton, and particles of dust, only to scatter them all again, so the Creator deals with his created beings in the same way. rendering devotional service to me qualifies any living being for eternal life. But by your good fortune, you have developed a special loving attitude toward me, by which you have obtained me. Dear ladies, I am the beginning and end of all created beings and exist both within and without them, just as the elements ether, water, earth, air, and fire are the beginning and end of all material objects and exist both within and without them. In this way, all created things reside within the basic elements of creation, while the spirit souls pervade the creation, remaining in their own true identity. You should see both of these, the material creation and the self, as manifest within me, the imperishable supreme truth. Shukadev Goswami said, having thus been instructed by Krishna in spiritual matters, the gopis were freed of all tinges of false ego because of their incessant meditation upon him. And with their deepening absorption in him, they came to understand him fully. The gopis spoke thus, Dear Lord, whose navel is just like a lotus flower, your lotus feet are the only shelter for those who have fallen into the deep well of material existence. Your feet are worshipped and meditated upon by great mystic yogis and highly learned philosophers. We wish that these lotus feet may also be awakened within our hearts, although we are only ordinary persons engaged in household affairs.